Om Gyanati Nirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Translation: by refraining from a particular sinful or materialistic activity, one becomes freed from its bondage. Such renunciation is the basis of religion and auspicious life for human beings and drives away all suffering, illusion, and fear. Purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated, Mahaprabhur Bhakta Garna Bhairagya Padhan E Jaha Deki Pritahan Gaura Bhagavan. Renunciation is the basic principle sustaining the lives of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. Seeing this renunciation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is extremely satisfied. Because of false ego, one considers oneself to be the proprietor and enjoyer of one's activities. Actually, Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, is the proprietor and enjoyer of our activities. Recognition of this fact in Krishna consciousness leads one to real renunciation. Every human being should perform his prescribed duty as an offering to the Supreme Lord. Then there will be no possibility of material entanglement. Lord Krishna clearly explains in Bhagavad Gita that prescribed duties performed as an offering to the Lord award liberation from material bondage. Sinful activities cannot be offered to the Lord, but must be given up altogether. In effect, the distinction between piety and sin is made so that the living entities will become pious and eligible to surrender to the Supreme Lord. As explained in Bhagavad Gita, Yejang tantagatang papang jananang punyakarmanam te dvandva mohanir mukta bhajante bang dudavrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated and who are freed from the duality of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. By thorough piety, one's life becomes auspicious and freed from lamentation, illusion, and fear, and one can then take to the path of Krishna consciousness. This is a continuing discussion, or more like not so much a discussion as a session of instruction by Krishna to Uddhava. Krishna is speaking, Uddhava is listening. One of these chapters is called Jnana Yoga, but practically the whole subject of this section, this very important section of Uddhava Gita, is Jnana, knowledge. Now, it could be said that this is not necessary at all. We already had the 10th canto, where in is displayed the superlative love for Krishna by the residents of Vrindavan. So having heard about that, then what do we need all this analysis of piety, impiety, liberation, bondage, sinful activity, renunciation? Why is that required if we already heard the 10th canto of Bhagavatam with the pastimes of Krishna? But actually this knowledge is required unless we are residents of Vrindavan. By residents of Vrindavan, that means the original residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, and they're all almost all gopis and gopas, cowherd boys and cowherd girls, who have spontaneous love for Krishna. Everyone in this material world doesn't have spontaneous love for Krishna. Therefore, Krishna comes to teach us the Vedic path. This chapter is called Explanation of the Vedic Path. So, noticeably, the chapter title is in the singular, Explanation of the Vedic Path, not of the Vedic Paths. There's the Vedic path. There may appear to be many paths, But they're all meant to lead to the same goal. That doesn't mean that they all do, necessarily. If one follows karma yoga but doesn't elevate oneself to a higher level, then he'll simply get the results of his karmic activities. So the Vedic path that Krishna is directing Uddhava to is the path of Krishna consciousness, of surrender to Krishna. But that also is to be understood, this important book. Important is an understatement, that now you're working on the Nectar of Devotion, is Srila Prabhupada's summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that describes the various bhakti rasas, and their vibhavs, anubhavs, and all these stai bhav, and all these, the complexities of bhakti rasa. But ultimately, bhakti rasa is to be experienced. It is tasty. Rasa means juice. So it's taste. It's like a tasty juice that is to be experienced. But then why is there a book? If it is to be experienced, then why have a book to describe all this? Well, by hearing about these rasas, we also we can taste that rasa. We can also develop a desire to taste that rasa. But we find that in that book, which is about bhakti, after all it is bhakti rasa, not material rasa. Rupa Goswami gives the philosophical understanding by which we should perform bhakti. Bhakti, pure devotional service to Krishna. Well, that's how Rupa Goswami defines bhakti. That is bhakti ruttama. That is the topmost level of bhakti. That is devoid of any desire other than to serve Krishna. So this delineation of the Vedic path of Krishna, which is ultimately Krishna consciousness, this is necessary for those who are not on the platform of pure devotional service, pure spontaneous devotional service. And even those who are on that platform, they also write books about it and help others to come to that platform. Now here in this verse, renunciation of is described, that refraining from sinful activities, that is the first level of renunciation, is to refrain from sinful activities. And then another level is to give up all activities for physical and bodily comfort. The six Goswamis, they were residents of Vrindavan. They were fully situated in pure devotional service. But they are famous for their nidrahara vihara kadi vijito chatyanta dino chayo, for their conquering over eating and sleeping, and the desire for prestige, because atyanta dina, they felt themselves to be extremely fallen. Even though they are the most elevated, they considered themselves to be the most fallen. So they exhibited such renunciation that is necessary for persons on the Vedic path, persons who are desirous to follow in the footsteps of the, this is another statement we find in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, or of more particularly of a specific resident of Vrindavan. So such an aspiring devotee aspires for this nidrahara vihara kadi vijito, conquering over eating, sleeping, the desire for prestige and all. So these are the qualities of a sadhu. The qualities of a sadhu and the aspirations of a sadhu, they're quite different from that of materialistic people. Here in San Diego, it's well, along with Los Angeles and New York, it vies for the distinction of being the most materialistic place in the world. Probably more so in the point of bodily comfort and pleasure, it's more even than Los Angeles. Yeah. So this with the beautiful climate here and the sunny skies and that's what I thought it's supposed to be. Yeah, I think.
Krishna's protecting you,
Maharaj. I see. Oh, really? I thought I'd enjoy. As one of our godbrothers said, well, devotional service is the same anywhere, so I'd rather practice it in heaven than hell. But that is the aspiration of the materialist, to live in San Diego or thereabouts, in a house on the beach and Pacific, what's this area called? Pacific Beach, and have a nice dog and a nice girlfriend or two, and everything nice, nice whiskey, first class, nice clothing, prestige. People will see, yes, he's a very good, respectable member of the society. Means he has enough, plenty of money. That's the main qualification. Vitameva kalonrinam janma chara gunodayaha. In Kali Yuga, the qualification to be a gentleman is that one should have plenty of money. The qualification to be considered a very cultured person or to have all, that is the quality if you have money. And good behavior means to have lots of money. If you have plenty of money, then you're well behaved. And if you don't have money, then you're a rascal. So these are the qualifications. How to get all qualifications. So comfort, prestige, material enjoyment, all these things which are desired by materialists. For devotees, or actually any sadhu, there are two varieties of sadhus. This maha. Mahantate samachita prashanta. There are two in this. Mahanta or Mahatma is described in this verse, that they are prashanta, they're very peaceful in their mind, they're not disturbed whether the sun shines or not, or whether they're in poverty or wealth or what, any such things. But in the translation, Srila Prabhupada describes that there are two kinds of mahatmas. One is a devotee and one is an impersonalist. So the impersonalists also, they are on the path of renunciation. And all that is desirable to materialists is abominable for sadhus. Everything that the materialists aspire for, the saintly persons aspire to become free from. The comfort, prestige, money, sense enjoyment, this Sri Aishwarya Prajapsavaha, this materialistic people, they liked in the purport to this verse, which I just quoted one line of, Srila Prabhupada writes that materialistic people, they like to be seen as having their homes, got beautiful women, opulence, plenty of children. Of course, in the modern age, there are no children, or one or two, no more. So that is considered this very prestigious. One who has money, they need to show that off. Otherwise, what is the use of having money? Not just for your own enjoyment, but you should be seen to be prestigious. Not only that you're in... Money is not only for enjoyment, but for personal enjoyment. But others should see how you are prestigious. That's why, at least in India, when someone's come up, made their money, they somehow or other they got money, they usually by corruption. So you want to get quick rich. If you want to get rich quickly, you can sell drugs, start your own religion, become God, or corruption, become a politician. The various ways to get rich quick. Forget Napoleon Hill. There are other ways. So when they've got all their money, then they want to show it off. Then they'll start some charitable trust for building hospitals or schools so that they'll become seen as a philanthropist. So people want to be seen as good people. They make all their money by exploiting people and cheating people, and then they perform some nominally pious or welfare activities so that people can praise them as good people. But for the devotee, he's just the opposite. He's not interested. Not only not interested, but they will deliberately shun such activities or advantages. Comfort, which is desired by materialistic people. Why not be comfortable? Live comfortably. Happily. But for devotees or for sadhus, aram is haram, which means comfort is abominable. That's a tongue twister of a word. Comfort is not desirable. One should jivasya tatva jignyasa. One should live only for the sake of understanding or inquiring into the nature of reality. And then why not? You can do it comfortably also. You can lie on a comfortable couch and discuss about I am Brahman, and armchair philosopher with holding some grapes, and chewing on some grapes, spitting out the seeds, enjoying yourself. But no, because material enjoyment is a diversion that will divert one from inquiry into the nature of reality. Because Maya means to, Maya offers us enjoyment in this material world, but that pursuit of enjoyment is that which covers our perception of reality and covers even our inclination to inquire into the nature of reality. That's why San Diego would be such a terrible place for self-realization if Radha Giridhari weren't here with their followers. They look just like little children, but they know a lot more than everyone else in San Diego or anyone else anywhere in the world, for that matter. They know everything. They're the real enjoyers. But everyone in San Diego is trying to imitate them. So this one should become free from sense enjoyment, and therefore renunciation is required. The practice, to practice vairagya. Vairagya, actually means the state of detachment from anything material. Not only comfort, but even from discomfort. One should not be attached even to discomfort. That's why the... you shouldn't... If you think that now I'm a big sadhu and see I can sit on my bed of thorns and my nail beds, and then that can also be a kind of attachment. One can actually be... In the mode of goodness, one can become attached to being austere. That's maybe why in the left-wing tantra, they perform all kinds of, to use that word again, you've got a synonym for that?
Horrible.
I've got a synonym, horrible.
Horrible, okay.
Horrible, I mean really disgusting activities, with the idea that their mind should not be, they should be steady in mind. Mahantaste samachitta prashanta, samachitta, to attain this steadiness of mind in which their mind doesn't become distracted in any way. They perform horrible activities, like for instance, copulating with corpses. How about that?
That's pretty abominable.
And you're not, and you do it in the burning ground. You have to. They. Anyway, I mean, they know all this anyway, so it's no harm to tell them. Yeah. Well, they make they do a little corruption with the guy who's burning the corpses, because people don't hang around for the hours for the corpses to be burned. So he drags them out, and then the tantric takes them off. And then at night, on a dark night when there's no moon, then they do this. And then all the ghosts come and attack them while they're doing this, of course, because it's in the burning ground. And then they have to remain completely calm, and then they think they're self-realized. And if you don't, it's a dangerous one, because if you have any fear, then you're finished. Then you'll be attacked by all the ghosts. And so tantra means some practical activities with leading to renunciation. Of course, Vaishnavas are also tantrics. We follow but we have a different tantra. Tantra means some practical activities by which one can become detached from the world. But simple detachment is not the purpose of devotees. Here this verse Srila Prabhupada quotes, Mahaprabhur bhaktagane bhairagya pradhan jaha deki pritahan gaura bhagavan. That Gaurang, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is very pleased when he sees his devotees having vairagya, which means detachment from this world, which is their principal characteristic. So this verse is quoted in connection with, this verse is given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's Antya 620? So, yeah, that's given in the narration of the devotee who's so detached from this world. But that's, yeah, Raghunath has so much renounced. I mean, it's like one day, you know, Nirjala Kadashi, you know, get ready for it. But Raghunath Das was, actually all the six Goswamis, they were practically doing that every day. Raghunath Das, he got to the stage where he was taking a little bit of buttermilk in his hand every 2 days or so, and maybe one or two chickpeas, and when he took it, he would chastise himself that, you see, now I'm such a big sense enjoyer, just for the sake of this body, I'm indulging in sense enjoyment. So, what is that? That is a state of renunciation of the world that comes because not just for the sake of renunciation, but because one is so eager to serve Krishna and so much given, so much surrendered to the principle that I am meant for Krishna's enjoyment. I am not meant for this body. I can enjoy, I can eat, I can drink, I can sleep, I can touch, and all the senses are there. But the very thought of enjoying it becomes abominable to the devotee, because he thinks that All these senses, they're only meant for Krishna service. If at all, even slightly, I am to use them for my, in the sense that I can enjoy separately from Krishna, then that is, that a devotee thinks, Raghunath Das thinks, that is a fall down. If I were even to slightly think of sense enjoyment, that is a fall down. So this is actual bhakti. That they're, I was saying about tantra. So Vaishnava tantra. In Vaishnava tantra, actually we make all endeavors for comfort and sense enjoyment. A Vaishnava is the most sensuous person in the world. He's always making arrangements for comfort and sense enjoyment, but for Radha Giridhari. He's all day simply engaged in making garlands, preparing scents, all nice foods. You'll find devotees talking about how to make all these different preparations and What's that? They're going to find someone who drank some water? When will that day come? So. So the devotees there, you'll see two devotees are talking about, yeah, you just add, see, make this preparation, just little, add a little admixture of camphor and it'll make this flavor so, just so superb. And you may think, what are these? These are sadhus, they're talking, and they're completely absorbed in discussing about how to make superb preparations. And they'll make all these preparations, complex preparations, which just like to cook this mocha, this banana stem. It's quite a job, even because you have to individually, you have to open them out, take out each stem, peel each one individually. It's quite a job to make it. It's a very time-consuming and what might seem to be boring activity. But that is done for the pleasure of Krishna. And so they're very happy to do it. There's one of my godbrothers, his name is Bhutakrit, which means he who, one meaning of that is he who feeds everyone, Bhutakrit Das. So he came to one temple I was staying in at one time, in Bangkok, which is a real place of sense enjoyment. But maybe Bangkok is rivaling there with San Diego, it's a horrible city. But people, anyway, I won't go into how it's horrible. We had enough of that stuff already. But we were living from he was from France, so I guess from his perspective, we were living quite austerely there in that horrible city. So he is an excellent cook, and somehow or other he managed to convince us that we should cook some nice things. And he cooked, and such preparations, so nicely he cooked. And then he fed us, served us prasadam, and he just sat and watched us taking prasadam. He was very happy to see. He didn't take himself. Maybe at the end, when we'd left, he just took a little like this. But he just wanted to cook and see that we're very happy to take prasadam. This also, Srila Prabhupada, I believe that was in Vishakhapatnam, one of his godbrothers, an expert cook. He'd cook all morning, serve the devotees. See, I'm talking about cooking on Ekadashi, torturing. Then serve all the, you see, cooking all morning, then serve all the devotees. Just very happy to see him. Prabhupada said, see, this is a Vaishnava. So that's a renounced activity. You cook, it may take hours and hours to cook, and people finish eating in 15 minutes. And Krishna finishes in 15 minutes, and devotee is finishing. But the devotee is very happy to see others happy. So devotee is the most sensuous person, but all for Krishna's pleasure. That story of Raghunath Das, there's there, that he became sick, and the living at Radha Kunda, he became sick. And then the Ayurvedic doctor was called, and Raghunath Das said that, well, I'm sick. It's because I overate. And I got stomach problem from indigestion. And everyone knew that was impossible because you can't overeat if you don't eat. So one condition if you're going to get indigestion is you have to eat something. And if you only eat, if you only take a little buttermilk in your hand and one or two chickpeas every 2 days, there's no question of overeating. There is a possibility of malnutrition, but not of overeating. So the Ayurvedic doctor was called and he said, yeah, it's a fact. I diagnosed his condition. He's got indigestion from overeating. And then it came to be understood that Raghunath Das, in his form as a gopi, he's living at Radhakunda in two forms. One as a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, another as a gopi in Krishna Leela, and at a feast, which just every day the gopis, they're all serving Radha and Krishna, and it's elaborate preparations. And they also they're feasting. And he said, Raghunath Das said, I ate too much sweet rice. So he was diagnosed with indigestion. So, the devotees, the Krishna Leela, that is full of sheer enjoyment. It's totally sensuous. That we find Indian culture, everything is extreme. Everything, if there's any music played, it's loud. The whatever was the maximum sound, it'll be turned up. But that's not something new. I mean, in traditional culture also, if you have these bands, I guess you call them, the pre-jazz or whatever. At marriages, they have the nada swaram and the mridanga. It's very loud, actually. It's even without any amplification. So the colors, you see the women, especially those who are not modern, are wearing jeans and t-shirts. And especially in Rajasthan and Gujarat, they'll have very bright colors, and the men, all it used to be, the men also. Even now in Dwarka, the pujaris, they'll be dressed in different colors, purple dhotis and all this kind of thing, green, bright green dhotis. So it's a very, it may seem like a very, and then the food is very spicy, and all different flavors, which people don't even know, they can't even imagine in this country. They think McDonald's is the height of human civilization, which for the benefit of the world, they have to export all over the world. But now in India, there's pizzas are becoming popular, but then they've chili flavor. How can you eat without some spices? That's not, even Prabhupada, when he was in Nairobi, Srila Prabhupada was served some boiled vegetables, and he said, this is pig food. So the culture seems very extreme. It's highly sensuous, but that's reflecting. Maybe it's a not fully aesthetic reflection of Krishna Leela, which is fully sensual. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not a stone or a nasty old man, or simply some light shining. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely sensuous. That he's the supreme enjoyer. It means that his senses are all extremely powerful. And he enjoys. Actually, that sense enjoyment is simply a medium for the devotees to express their love for him. And so that's in Krishna Leela. And in Gaur Leela, it is shown renunciation from this world. We are not enjoying. We are simply serving Krishna's senses. So that is the renunciation of a sadhu. The devotees, they're renounced from this world. The yogis and the gyanis, they're also renounced. But the devotees, for them, renunciation is not the aim and object in itself. For the non-devotee sadhus, renunciation is itself, that is considered the perfection. But for a devotee, he's renounced from this world because he's completely absorbed in love of Krishna. That everything should be for Krishna. Everything for Krishna's enjoyment. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he made some facility for devotees in the West, because if he came in and if Srila Prabhupada had tried to institute the standards that were there in the Gauriya Math at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he wouldn't have, no one would have come, it would have been too difficult, and still is too difficult. In the Gauriya Math, Srila Prabhupada sometimes quoted that the Mathavasis, that means the sannyasis and the brahmacharis and the vanaprastas and the babajis and the renounced grihasthas who are living in the mud, they would live a very austere life. They had no shoes, very austere diet, except on feasts, feast days. And the grihasthas, they were called pacha grihastha, rotten, simply rotten. So Prabhupada, he said, I'm a rotten grihastha. But he was able to spread Krishna consciousness because he knew the essence. He took the essence is not simply to be renounced from this world, but to engage the senses in the service of Krishna. That is the essence. And in doing so, one also enjoys. So Srila Prabhupada instituted that there should be a festival every Sunday. That was the every Sunday. Of course, there are festivals with, there's, you know, Gaur Purnima, Ramanavami, Narsimha Chaturdashi. There's one festival after that. So many festivals throughout the years. But Srila Prabhupada instituted every Sunday there should be a festival and a feast. And in the festival, it was elaborate. The original Sunday festival, there'd be dramas and puppet shows, and the festival, the public were invited en masse, and big prasadam, and really elaborate, so that devotees could engage their senses. These people who were used to a highly sensuous lifestyle, they could pick up the principle of engaging one's senses in Krishna consciousness. So that in the beginning, newcomers, they're encouraged, take prasadam till you wobble. Take prasadam till you drop. And eventually we're supposed to get in the mood of Raghunath Das Goswami. There was one devotee in, he joined, this was way back in the 1970s, he joined and he was really into Krishna consciousness, but every so often he would leave for a few days and then come back. You know this story? You know all the stories.
No.
You don't know the story. So he would come back after some days. And then this became less frequent, and gradually it stopped. Then, after some time, his parents visited the temple, and they said that, yeah, we're very happy, our son's here, and he's very happy now. And, you know, we could never understand why, when he first joined, he used to come home for a few days, and then he would just come, and every day he would chant his Hare Krishnas. Then he'd cook this big, huge pot of farina with butter and sugar and say some prayers and eat this huge pile and then go to sleep for the rest of the day. So he was a halava addict. And he'd take a break, not recommending this, by the way. Give them here. So I also remember asking my Tamil president, he passed away recently in London, Vichitravirya, that Radha Landanishwara. Now, I can cite on authority that they are the most beautiful deities in ISKCON. Authority of Srila Prabhupada. Don't kill me. I know you're attached to Radha Giridhari.
We have some comments in Radha Giridhari.
Yeah, but I'm not going to listen to them. Prabhupada said. So Radha Landanishwara, they're so beautiful that all the devotees coming from America to going to India, they would always stop in London just to take their darshan and also their prasadam, which was famous. The prasadam of Radha Landanishwara was famous, and the Sunday feasts were almost literally knockouts, because there were five stories going up the stairs to the brahmachari ashram, and after the feast, the brahmacharis would somehow or other drag themselves up the stairs, and then the floor would just be covered with bodies. And there's an attic also, and that would get full up, and then there's the roof, and that would just be covered with groaning brahmacharis. So I asked Vichitravirya Prabhu, I see, we're talking about renunciation, and I'm testing your renunciation for your fasting on, while we're talking about prasadam. So I asked him on one Monday that why did Prabhupada institute these Sunday feasts when the devotees just get completely knocked out, literally. And his immediate reply was that without waiting a second, he replied that, well, if we didn't have these feasts, if we didn't have them, everyone would bloop. You all know that word bloop? You all bloop, yeah. So
they don't bloop when they hang around.
Well, now you see, the thing is, we have every day nice prasadam. But in those days, it was like, well, Mahaprasad was there, but otherwise it was, they used to count the number. Prabhupada said you should only have 8 chickpeas, and they'd count the number of chickpeas they're giving to everyone. Right here they did that also.
In LA?
Yeah, everyone. Count the number of chickpeas, and there was a dispute whether Prabhupada said 8 or 10, and then there was a big dispute, give me 2 more. And on the wax paper, yeah. When I first joined in, it was actually in Bhaktivedanta Manor, there was just this, every morning, this, because we got cow's milk, and then there was farina, and people would donate, and sugar, so every morning you'd have that for breakfast. And devotees would be in a long line to get the Raghunath Das Goswami amount of Mahaprasadam. That was the big treat for the day. You get this much Mahaprasadam, and devotees would stand in 10 minutes in a line to get this much. So, yeah, Srila Prabhupada, he gave, yeah, enjoy, be happy in Krishna consciousness. He would always emphasize it. Be happy, enjoy. But ultimately one has to understand that Krishna is the enjoyer. You see, by listening to the 10th canto, Krishna Leela, we hear about Krishna's pastimes, very enjoyable, but if we think that's for my enjoyment, then we can never enter there. So this explanation of the Vedic path, the philosophy that is required to understand how to live and act in this world so that we can become detached from it and become attached to Krishna, so that we can enter ultimately into the Rasa Leela, where we can enjoy unlimitedly by having completely surpassed the level of thinking that anything is for my enjoyment. So therefore that we require to hear this. We may think, well, let me just do bhakti. What's the use of all this philosophy? We'll just do bhakti. But this is required. This understanding is required so that we can separate our control our thoughts. The thought of enjoyment should not enter our mind. That I shall enjoy this Madhavendra Puri. He thought to taste the kheer offered to Gopinath, the deity, because he thought then I could understand how to prepare it for my deity. But then the thought that I thought I will taste to see how nice it is, he considered that that even though it was for the sake of it, tasting it to see how nice it is so that he could offer it to Krishna, but still he considered that thought to have been offensive. So that is the stage we're aiming at. So we're a long way to go. By the mercy of Radha Giridhari, everything is possible. Offer everything to them. Everything. Living in the ashram means we're living in the shelter of Radha Giridhari. That means everything is for them. All nice, bring all the nice things of the world. All the, this flowers, scents, food, all so many beautiful young Californian girls, they should all come and serve Radha, and not for our enjoyment. We should not think, not for our enjoyment. Everything for their enjoyment. Therefore we have on the altar Prabhupada, Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. What are they doing there? Why are they there? They're there to serve. They're the examples. We worship them because they show us, and they are the via media by which we will serve. Because they're completely fixed up in the attitude of service to Krishna. We are not. They kindly intercede. They are living eternally with Radha Giridhari, but they come to this world appearing as if ordinary people to they kindly interact with us and direct us. Here, you offer this to Krishna. And they offer it. They become the media, they train us, and they become the media by which everything is offered to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question, comment about this? Yes, please.
Forgive me, I cannot think of a verse in the Bhagavatam, which is in the Charitamrita, but there are verses that I've memorized. And there's several from the Yahweh. And here's one. Actually, the prayer, it seems to be, the end of the prayer is please delight me. And he says, Nanda Nandana Padada Nayu, Sanyamana Maharanda Pindava, Sindhava Padma Sauke Santanam, Nandi Yantu Vidyam Mamanisham. So a rough meaning is from the lotus feet of Nandananda are particularly these drops of makaranda, honey, proto.
Which honey?
Proto. What bees make honey out of?
Oh, I see.
Free honey. That's the sweet little nectar they constantly use, that's makaranda. But it's all not a bindala, it's cinder. These are actually oceans. These little drops of ocean are Padma Sauke Sampadam, containing the treasure of the highest happiness. And then the last line says, Nandi Yandu Vidi Yamamanisha, which according to the translation, please delight me. If we may I delight in those that
May I delight. May I delight. That's a little difference from may please delight me.
Okay.
Isn't it?
So how do we understand it? He's praying there for happiness.
Yeah.
So that we could
do. Yeah. That's the constitutional position of the jiva, is to be fully blissful. But one's happiness should be in the... There's nothing wrong with wanting to be happy. We're not the, you know, we're not dry renunciants. We're not self-flagellants or any. But yes, be happy. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. You could condense all of Srila Prabhupada's instructions into that one line. But that happiness means to share in Krishna's happiness, not to try to become, to usurp Krishna's happiness or Krishna's position. That when kadahamaikantika nityakinkara praharsha yashami sanata jivita. When will I? That exactly explains the position, doesn't it? When becoming your ekanta, your fully focused servant with no other thought of anything else, I'll be fully delighted in that position, understanding yourself as my Lord. So that more or less catches that. Yeah, that more or less catches the point. Yes.
In the report, it says persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, Krishna actions are completely irrational and are free from the duality of delusion, engagement, selfish, and messes with determination.
Yeah, that's of course a quote from Bhagavad Gita.
Well, I know that personally I can't say that I have acted piously in my life before coming to the temple, and I can't say that I acted piously in my previous lives, and I haven't personally met many devotees who were pious before they came to the temple, so then... And
how does it work? Causeless mercy. You must be pious to have been attracted to Krishna consciousness. There must have been something there. But that's causeless mercy. Prabhupada said, when a devotee asked Prabhupada about this, about how we're all sinful, how could we come? Prabhupada said, I have made your pious activities. Yes, please.
I was there when Madhavisa asked the question. He said, I was performing sinful deeds. What do you speak of? A stock of pious activities. I was performing sinful deeds since the moment,
Yeah, normal Western person creates enough sinful activities every day to go to hell for a long, long time.
Yeah. And Prabhupada responded, just as you say, he said, I've created your good fortune. And then Prabhupada said, and all I ask is you go create good fortune for others.
Nice, very nice. In the perfection of yoga, I believe it is, Srila Prabhupada states that people who are coming to this Krishna conscious movement, they must have performed devotional service in previous lives also. Bhava Ananda, he stated that Prabhupada had made such a statement, and Bhava Ananda responded, well, how is that possible? You see, we're all so sinful. And Prabhupada said that was superficial, because as soon as you heard the Hare Krishna mantra, you came running. So we shouldn't think that in my past life I was a highly elevated devotee. We shouldn't think like that. We should think that I'm very sinful. And actually we have. I think all of us sitting in this room have committed, well, some more than, especially those from Western backgrounds, have committed many sinful activities. But we should think that yogata bichare kichuna hipai tomara karunasha. If my qualifications for being engaged in devotional service are examined, you'll find the qualification amounts to zero. That Bhaktivinoda Thakur sang. And in our case, we can say minus zero. We're in the minus position. But the causeless mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, that is the essence of our qualification. Yeah, anything else?